Those diamonds she was wearing this evening must be worth a king's ransom, Edgar said as he lit up one of his cigarettes.
That was quite a scene this evening with Titania Liggett, Kitty said as she seated herself opposite her father and slipped off her gold evening shoes.
The gossip amongst the ladies who lunch is that Nora is expecting Mortimer to leave his wife and marry her. From things Nora has said to me, I think that's probably true. I don't know if Titania is aware of this plan.
Edgar blew smoke rings up towards the ceiling.
But she knew of the affair?
Matt asked, leaving the hamper on the table and coming to join them.
Oh, yes, I rather think she thought it was simply a brief indiscretion and she could just ignore it and let it blow over. It's not the first time this has happened. Titania is the one with money in that marriage. Mortimer hasn't a bean of his own, Edgar said.
So Titania thought her position fairly safe, I suppose. But if Nora is wealthy herself, then Mortimer may jump ship, Matt observed.
Dear me, what a scandal. Kitty placed a hand in front of her mouth to suppress a yawn. I really think I must go to bed. All the dancing and excitement has quite worn me out. She said goodnight to her father, and she and Matt retired for the night. Kitty woke the following morning to a crisp, bright day. A fresh sprinkling of snow once again covered the ground and sparkled enticingly in the morning sunlight. Kitty was filled with restless energy and the desire to get out and explore Central Park.
Papa said there is a tea house in the park that serves breakfast, Kitty said as she gave Matt a winning smile. Let's go and walk the cobwebs away and do a little exploring. Papa rarely rises before lunch anyway, so we can leave him a note to say where we have gone.
Matt laughed and agreed. She suspected he too wished to get out into the fresh air. Being cooped up inside never suited him. Kitty scribbled a note for her father and left it on the coffee table. They wrapped up warmly and made their way to the lobby, where they asked for directions to the tea house in the park from the concierge. He seemed to be a different man from the one who had been there the previous day.
Just go out of here, turn to the left, and through the iron gates into the park. Follow the path where it rises and you'll see it right up ahead, the man said.
They thanked him and set off. The streets were crowded already with Christmas shoppers looking for last-minute gifts and grocery items. It was only 4 days to Christmas, and the air crackled with the energy Kitty had already come to associate with the city, and she was glad when they turned off and walked into the calm of the park. The grey slush of the well-trodden city sidewalks gave way to the delicious crisp crunch of fresh snow. Only a few people appeared to have passed that way, and the white cover on the path had few footprints. Their breath hung in frozen clouds in front of them as they walked, and Kitty was glad of Matt's arm to prevent her slipping, despite her stout boots. Within a few minutes, they had drawn level with the back of the apartment building they had just left.
There seems to be a path there, Kitty said, indicating with her sheepskin mittened hand. I wonder that the concierge didn't send us that way.
They both looked at the short and well-used path leading from the rear of the apartment block between some snowy, scrubby laurels. Footprints leading to and from the building were just visible under the fresh snow layer.
Perhaps it is used mainly by the staff. A service entrance to the building. The kitchens are there, so the cooks and delivery people may use it,
Matt suggested as he followed Kitty's gaze.
Wait. There is something there.
He paused and frowned.
What is it?
Kitty stopped to look, alerted by the urgent tone in Matt's voice. There was something incongruously green and bright against the snow, half hidden by the bushes. Kitty exchanged a worried glance with Matt, and together they took a few steps forward to investigate. Her heart pounded in her chest.
Surely that can't be,
Kitty gasped, as they drew closer to the mysterious bundle. Nora Dangerfield lay dead amongst the bushes. The green satin of her evening gown was frosted and lightly sprinkled with snow. A startled expression was on her lips, and the diamonds she had been wearing in her ears and around her neck and wrists were missing. Her lips were blue and there were signs of bruising around her throat. She was indisputably dead. It looked as if she must have been killed some time before, judging by the snow on her dress.
"She's been strangled. How on earth did she get here?"
Kitty looked around for clues. Nora's mink sable fur throw was trapped under her body, implying she had slipped it on to step outside for a brief moment. The ground was trampled, and there were no clear footprints thanks to the snowfall.
"I don't know, but we must get the police."
Matt's mouth was set in a grim line.
"I can't believe she's not been missed before now."
Kitty shivered. What could have happened after the end of the party for Nora to have finished up dead outside the apartment building? Matt followed the narrow path leading to the rear of the building, where Kitty heard him knocking on what she assumed must be the rear door of the block. She heard male voices and various bumps and bangs. While she waited for Matt to return or help to arrive, she carefully examined the body, being certain not to touch anything. All of Nora's jewels were missing. Her bracelet, rings, watch, earrings, and necklace were gone. Her party mask lay on the floor beside her body. The elastic on the back was broken, and her bejeweled hair clips lay beside it, possibly shaken off in a struggle. Kitty bent to study Nora's hands to see if there might be a clue there, a fragment of cloth or some blood beneath the woman's beautifully manicured nails, but there was nothing. Matt returned to join her.
"The police are on their way. There was a service door, as we suspected. It leads to the kitchen the chef uses to make meals for the building."
He placed his arm around Kitty's waist.
"Are you all right, old thing?"
Kitty nodded.
"Yes, I'm just a little shaken."
She managed a wan smile. "I should be used to this sort of thing by now. Everywhere we go, it seems a body turns up."
Matt returned her smile. "It certainly feels that way. I told the concierge not to alert Nora's staff or her family until the police arrive."
Kitty gave her husband a sharp look.
"You think she was killed by someone she knew?"
"I don't know for certain, but whoever killed her knew about this entrance to the building. She must have trusted them to voluntarily come down here after the party. It may be a member of her staff or a family member was involved. In any case, the less people trampling over a crime scene, the better."
Kitty nodded. She could see his logic. She also thought it wouldn't be very nice for Nora's loved ones to see her like this, discarded in the shrubbery like a piece of rubbish. There was the sound of the service door opening once more, and two fresh-faced uniformed police officers came through the shrubbery. They were accompanied by an older man with dark hair dressed in street clothes. He wore a dark brown Homburg hat and a thick dark brown overcoat.
"Captain and Mrs. Bryant?" he asked as he approached.
"Yes, sir," Matt replied, and waited as the detective gave Nora's body a swift assessing glance.
"You found this lady, and you and Mrs. Bryant know her?"
he asked, while stooping over Nora.
"Yes, this is Mrs. Nora Dangerfield. She occupies the penthouse apartment in this block," Kitty answered.
She was quite cold now. She couldn't even feel her feet from where they had been standing in the snow.
"You live in this building too?"
the detective asked as he glanced up at her.
"No, sir, we're visiting from England. My father lives in an apartment on the floor below Mrs. Dangerfield. We're staying with him for Christmas," Kitty answered.
The two constables had stationed themselves, one outside the service door and one on the public path just a few feet away. Kitty presumed it was to prevent anyone else from stumbling across the scene.
The lady is in evening wear."
The detective straightened up.
"Well, there was a party here last night, a charity fundraiser hosted by Mrs. Dangerfield for a local orphanage. All her jewellery is missing," Kitty said.
The detective looked keenly at her.
"You and your husband were at this party?"
"Yes, sir. Mrs. Dangerfield extended us an invitation when she knew we were staying with Edgar, my father-in-law,"
Matt answered instead of Kitty, and she felt his arm squeeze her a little tighter around her waist.
"I see. Which apartment are you staying in?"
the policeman asked. Matt gave Edgar's address.
If I can ask you and Mrs. Bryant to return to that address, and I'll come along to speak to you both shortly.
The detective took a card from his pocket and gave it to Matt.
It's mighty cold out here. And, Mrs. Bryant, you must have had a nasty shock, finding this lady like this. Thank you, sir.
Matt tucked the card inside his coat pocket, and they retraced their steps back the way they had come. Kitty was glad to be moving again to try and get the circulation going in her frozen feet. The concierge looked up as soon as they entered the lobby, an eager expression on his face.
What's happening out there, sir, ma'am? I've had both Peggy Marsh and Horatio Blackstock asking me if I've seen Mrs. Dangerfield this morning.
The police will be in shortly. I'm certain they will speak to Mrs. Dangerfield's staff and family once they've established what's happened to her, Matt said.
This is a very reputable building. We've never had any trouble here before.
The concierge looked pale and troubled, running his tongue across lips which seemed to have dried.
It is most peculiar. Were you on duty late last night? Kitty asked.
No, ma'am. My shift started at 6 this morning, and the guy I took over from didn't hand across anything out of the ordinary. He didn't say as Mrs. Dangerfield was out.
You have a record of people entering and leaving the building? Kitty asked.
Yes, ma'am. Just the residents and any particular visitors they might be expecting, or packages, that kind of thing.
The concierge looked bewildered.
I take it that the service door is usually used just by staff?
Kitty could see there was a door behind the concierge's desk, and she assumed that must lead to the kitchens and the door to the outside.
Yes, ma'am. A lady like Mrs. Dangerfield would never have gone out that way,
the concierge asserted.
And yet, Kitty thought, she had done so last night.
Chapter 5. Father is going to be dreadfully upset, Kitty remarked as they ascended in the elevator to the apartment. He seemed to be very good chums with Nora. It's such a dreadful thing to have happened to her. She was in such good spirits at the party.
Yes, it's a horrid shock.
Matt gave Kitty a concerned look when she shivered.
Are you all right, darling? I think some brandy might be in order when we get inside.
Edgar was up, drinking coffee from an elegant white geometrically shaped porcelain cup when they let themselves into the apartment.
You two are back jolly early,
he exclaimed in surprise, looking at the clock on the mantelpiece.
Did they run out of maple syrup at the tea house?
His jovial expression sobered when he caught sight of Kitty's face.
Papa, there is no easy way to tell you this, but I'm afraid your friend, Nora Dangerfield, is dead. Murdered. Matt and I have just found her outside the building.
Kitty sat down heavily on the sofa. Edgar startled, slopping a little of his coffee into the saucer.
What? When? How? Oh, my darling girl, that's awful.
He stared at Kitty.
It looks as if she was strangled in the early hours of this morning. She was still in her evening dress from last night, Matt said as he took off his overcoat and hat. I think Kitty could use a little brandy. It's been a ghastly shock.
Oh, yes, of course.
Edgar set down his cup and saucer and jumped to his feet. He rummaged inside a small, stylish cocktail cabinet and produced 3 crystal glasses and a brandy bottle.
The police are downstairs now, dealing with everything. They will be up shortly, I dare say, to speak to us, Kitty said.
A look of alarm spread over her father's face as he poured a generous shot of brandy into each glass.
Police?
Well, yes, obviously. They will need a statement from me and Kitty since we were the ones who found her. I expect they will want to ask us all questions about the party too.
Matt picked up a couple of glasses and passed one to Kitty. Kitty took a sip and gasped as the heat from the spirit hit the back of her throat. A moment later, a warm sensation spread around her sternum and she gave herself a mental shake.
What was the name of the detective that we met downstairs? Is it on the card he gave us?
She asked, looking at Matt. Her husband rummaged in the pocket of his recently discarded overcoat.
Lieutenant Tanfield, he said, looking at the small oblong card.
Her father gave a slight groan, and Kitty looked at him. I take it you have encountered him before? She asked. Somehow, knowing her father as she did, she was not unduly surprised.
Our paths may have crossed once or twice, Edgar admitted.
Kitty's heart sank, and she took another sip of brandy before putting her glass down on the table and discarding her fur coat. She dreaded to think how her father may have encountered the lieutenant, but she suspected it was not in a positive way.
I can't believe it.
And it was definitely murder, you say? Her father shook his head. Who would want to harm Nora? She seemed to be having words with a few people last night.
Titania, you mean? But surely you don't think Titania would have harmed her?
Edgar looked aghast.
She did slap her, Matt said.
I know, dear boy, but that was in the heat of the moment. Too much champers. I mean murder. Well.
Edgar's voice trailed off, clearly appalled at the idea that Titania might be a suspect. It's no use speculating. I suppose we shall have to wait until the police arrive before we learn anything more, Kitty said. She finished her brandy and was relieved to discover she was starting to feel better. The combination of the cold and the shock of discovering Nora's body had made her feel quite ill. It was some time later before there was a knock on the apartment door.
I think I might make myself scarce just while you talk to Lieutenant Tanfield. Give you more privacy, Edgar said as he made a bolt for his bedroom.
Kitty suppressed a sigh and went to open the door for the police officer. Do come in, Lieutenant. She led the way to the sitting room after hanging up the policeman's overcoat. May we offer you some tea or perhaps coffee? She suggested, belatedly recalling that America was not so fond of tea as the English.
No, thank you, ma'am.
The detective took a seat on one of the armchairs and pulled a notebook from inside the top breast pocket of his jacket.
Perhaps you'd both be so good as to run me through what happened earlier today. What time did you stumble upon Mrs. Dangerfield?
Kitty took a seat next to Matt. I think we set off from here just before 10 o'clock. We had been told there was a tea house in the park which offered a good breakfast menu. The policeman nodded and made notes as Kitty outlined what had happened.
Did you recognize her straight away? The policeman asked.
Matt shook his head.
No, we just saw something bright green amongst the bushes, and it struck us as odd. It wasn't until we got closer that we realized it was Nora.
And you recognized her gown as the one she was wearing for her party?
Lieutenant Tanfield said. Yes, she'd taken the wings off the back of her dress, I assume so she could wear her first doll, but her mask and the diamantic clips she'd had in her hair were lying next to her. Kitty gave a little shudder at the memory. The lieutenant raised an eyebrow at this as he made his notes.
You seem to be very observant, Mrs. Bryant.
Matt pulled his silver card case from his pocket and offered the policeman one of their business cards.
We are in a similar line of work to you, back in England, Lieutenant.
The detective studied the card before slipping it inside the front cover of his notebook.
Private eyes, eh? You over here on business?
No, sir. As we said, we are here to visit my father. He's been very ill, and Mrs. Dangerfield had sent us a telegram urging us to come here. Kitty said.
Your father seems to have been very friendly with Mrs. Dangerfield.
The policeman looked at Kitty. They were neighbours, Kitty said. She thought it best not to enlarge on their friendship.
Is your father at home now?
The detective glanced about the apartment. He's resting in his room at present. He was very shocked at the news of Nora's murder, and he has been ill lately. I can see if he is awake. Kitty rose from her seat and went along the hall to tap on her father's bedroom door. Not hearing a reply, she opened the door and peeped inside to discover her father lounging on his bed, studying the racing pages of the newspaper. The detective would like to speak to you, she said.
Drat.
Edgar cast the paper regretfully to one side.
Very well, darling, tell him I'll be right out.
Kitty nodded and went back to her seat in the sitting room to relay the message.
Edgar joined them a moment later, looking his usual dapper self. Lieutenant Tanfield gave him a nod, his eyes narrowing in recognition.
"I believe we have met before, haven't we, Mr. Underhay?"
"Yes, I rather think we have had that pleasure," Edgar agreed as he took his seat on the vacant armchair.
"Your daughter was telling me that Mrs. Dangerfield telegrammed her to visit as you were very ill. I take it that would be about a week or so ago?"
The policeman looked at Edgar's seemingly healthy pink complexion.
"Yes, that's right. I have a bit of a chest issue. Causes problems from time to time. I was rather rough for a few days, and I think she panicked. Nora was such a dear lady and a good neighbour. I can't believe this has happened. I shall miss her."
Edgar looked regretful.
"You and Mrs. Dangerfield were close?"
The lieutenant's eyes narrowed again as he asked the question.
"Only as neighbours, dear boy. She would call in for afternoon tea occasionally, and a bit of advice on the old GGs. That's horses to you Americans."
Edgar adjusted his shirt cuffs.
"I see. Did she confide in you at all during these visits? Talk about anyone she might have argued with?"
the policeman asked.
"Well, there were a few things, obviously, but all quite trivial in the scheme of things."
Edgar suddenly looked uncomfortable.
"Such as?"
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
"Well, she would argue with her daughter, Lorena, from time to time, mother and daughter type things. Nora would offer advice and Lorena would ignore her. Nora paid for most of their bills, though, so Lorena would soon come around to her mother's way of thinking. There had been a few issues lately, I think, about Lorena's husband, Rudolph,"
Edgar said.
"What kind of issues?"
The lieutenant's pen raced across the page.
"She was very vague about it, but he suddenly seemed to have fallen out of favour. Nora would blow hot and cold with people, so I didn't place much store on it. She was complaining a lot lately about Peggy, too." "That's the assistant?"
The policeman looked at Edgar to make sure he had the right person.
"Yes, that's the one. She said things were going missing, then turning up someplace else. She said Peggy was careless."
Edgar gave a small shrug. Kitty remembered how tired the girl had seemed the previous evening.
"I see. Did she mention Mr. Blackstock to you at all?"
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
"Horatio?"
Edgar's brow puckered, as if he were trying to remember.
"Not really, only that she felt he was getting older and he might wish to consider retiring,"
Edgar said. Kitty hadn't considered that the manservant might be of retirement age. She had thought him most sprightly, efficient, and well-trained at the party.
"When did you and Mrs. Bryant first meet Mrs. Dangerfield?"
Lieutenant Tanfield switched his attention to Matt.
"I think it was the day we arrived. She called in for a brief visit on the afternoon. I believe the concierge downstairs had informed her of our arrival,"
Matt said. Kitty nodded in agreement. "She popped in and kindly extended an invitation to her party to raise funds for the orphanage. She said it was a cause close to her heart. It was very kind of her."
"Her late husband was an orphan, I believe. She held the party every year,"
Edgar interjected.
Lieutenant Tanfield made a note. "What time did you all leave Mrs. Dangerfield's party?"
"We left just after midnight, I think. Everyone was going then. There were still a few people after us saying goodnight," Kitty said.
"You all left together. None of you went back for anything. And you saw Mrs. Dangerfield at that time?"
the policeman asked.
Kitty nodded. "Yes, we came away together. Papa won that hamper over there."
She indicated the large wicker basket, which still stood on the side table.
"So Matt carried it down for him. We sat around here chatting for a few minutes, then we all went to bed. Nora was speaking to Horatio Blackstock as we left, so she was in the apartment then."
"None of us left the apartment here until Kitty and I went out for breakfast this morning. Edgar was still in bed when we left."
Matt picked up the note Kitty had scribbled, which was still on the table to show the detective.
"Mrs. Bryant, you seem to be very observant. Did you notice if Mrs. Dangerfield was wearing her jewellery when you left?"
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
"Oh, yes. She had a lovely diamond necklace, two bracelets, dropper earrings with emeralds, and a gold evening watch. She also had a couple of diamond and emerald rings. I noticed she wasn't wearing them when we found her. I assume they are not in her jewel box, Kitty said.
No, ma'am. Her assistant says they are missing. She has searched the apartment and the safe has been checked,
the policeman said. And did they not notice Nora leave the apartment after the party? I mean, surely Peggy and Horatio would have been there clearing up, even if the other staff had gone home, Kitty said.
Apparently, Mrs. Dangerfield would sometimes leave the apartment without telling anyone and would return a short time later.
The lieutenant appeared to be reading from his notes. A faint flush appeared on his cheeks, and Kitty wondered if this might be due to the reasons for Nora's popping out.
Oh, when she would slip off to meet up with Mortimer Liggett, you mean?
Edgar had far less discretion.
Mrs. Dangerfield's assistant says that Mrs. Liggett assaulted Mrs. Dangerfield at the party.
The policeman looked round at them in turn.
Titania slapped her. It was hardly an assault, simply a combination of too much champagne and overwrought emotions, I'd say,
Edgar said.
But Mrs. Dangerfield and Mr. Liggett were conducting an affair,
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
I don't see any point beating about the bush. It has to be the worst-kept secret in New York. They were hardly discreet. I believe Nora expected Mortimer to divorce Titania and marry her.
Edgar ignored Kitty's slightly disapproving look.
And Mrs. Liggett was aware of the affair? Or did she only find out about it last night?
The policeman waited for Edgar's response.
Oh, Titania knew, but Mortimer is a bit of a dog. It wasn't his first foray outside the old matrimonial bedroom. I think she thought it would fizzle out. Titania has the money in that marriage. Usually she just cuts off the old dollar supply and Mortimer comes home with his tail tucked between his legs.
Edgar gave a slight shrug.
Except this time Mrs. Dangerfield also had lots of money, so could woo Mr. Liggett away.
The policeman added more notes. Kitty could see the policeman mentally making a case against Titania Liggett, and she couldn't really blame him.
Chapter 6 Matt could also see the way the detective's mind was working. However, Titania had been a drink-sodden, emotional wreck, barely able to walk when Mortimer had removed her from the party. He couldn't see how she could have recovered sufficiently to lure Nora to her death a scant hour or couple of hours later, let alone having the presence of mind or strength to strangle her love rival. Mortimer Liggett could have persuaded Nora to meet him and then killed her, but surely he had more to gain from simply divorcing his wife and marrying Nora. Although if Titania had proved difficult and refused the divorce, then he could have framed Titania and inherited her money when she was convicted and executed, all of which sounded horribly cold-blooded and complicated. Then there was the mystery of the missing jewellery. Had whoever murdered Nora taken it, or had it been stolen later by some opportunist stumbling across her body while she lay dead in the shrubbery?
Thank you for all the information. I have to talk to Mrs. Dangerfield's daughter and son-in-law now. Naturally, Mrs. Briggs is most upset about her mother's death.
Lieutenant Tanfield closed his notebook and tucked it away inside his pocket, ready to depart. I expect she is. It's such a terrible thing to happen, especially after last night, when everyone was so happy and enjoying themselves, Kitty said.
Please pass on our condolences to her and her husband, Matt said, as he rose from his seat to see the detective out.
Sure thing. Thanks again,
Lieutenant Tanfield said, and left to go and talk to Lorena and Rudolph. As soon as the detective was out of earshot, Kitty rounded on her father.
Papa, what was that all about? It's not like you to discuss your friend's private affairs with the police in that way.
Usually her father would tell the police as little as possible when he was questioned over anything. Something she had witnessed for herself several times before, so his recent behaviour was out of character.
Edgar shifted uncomfortably in his seat, but feigned an air of nonchalance.
Darling, Lieutenant Tanfield had obviously heard about Titania, and he's bound to discover Nora and Mortimer's affair. It would look bad if I didn't tell him.
Kitty thought he was probably right about that, but she still wasn't sure why he had been quite so forthcoming.
Are you sure that's all it was? She eyed him suspiciously.
I didn't have a choice. You must have seen how he was trying to work me into the frame, the way he kept on about Nora and I being friends. I have no intention of being hauled off to Clink in handcuffs again for something that is nothing to do with me, Edgar protested.
Kitty drummed her fingers on the leather-padded arm of the sofa in frustration.
You were telling the truth about not seeing Nora again after we left the party. You didn't go back up there to her apartment for any reason.
She hated feeling so suspicious of her own father, but Edgar's relationship with the truth could sometimes be rather tenuous, which is why he'd landed in trouble before.
On my honour. Cross my heart and hope to die.
Edgar made the sign of the cross on his chest and attempted to look virtuous. Kitty was forced to believe him, but the element of doubt still lingered. Matt joined them, taking his place beside Kitty.
Lieutenant Tanfield seems like a decent sort of a chap, Matt said. You said you and he had crossed paths before.
He looked at his father-in-law.
Only a couple of times. A few minor misunderstandings, nothing serious, Edgar said.
Such as? Kitty asked, noticing her father suddenly looking quite shifty once again.
A couple of years ago, there was a spot of bother over some carousing and something about a fire hydrant being damaged.
All quite innocent, I assure you. A celebration that got a little out of hand.
Edgar's gaze slid away from Kitty's.
And the other time? Matt asked.
I was looking after a few things for a pal, just helping a fellow out of a tight spot, as one does. Only it turned out that the things he left with me weren't actually his, and it got a bit sticky for a while.
Edgar ran his finger around the edge of his white shirt collar, easing it away from his neck.
Gosh, it's gone rather warm in here, don't you think? Shall I turn the electric fire down?
Kitty could see how handling stolen goods could be described as being more than a little sticky. It was no wonder her father had looked so uncomfortable when Lieutenant Tanfield had entered the apartment.
I think the heat in here is about right, Kitty remarked dryly.
Her stomach growled, reminding her that they had missed their breakfast. She saw the corners of Matt's lips quirk upwards and guessed he had heard her.
Shall we go out for a spot of lunch? Her husband suggested.
Good idea. You two go and enjoy yourselves. You deserve it after what's happened. I think I'll stay here. It's all been a bit much for me,
Edgar offered, and Kitty guessed he would be glad to have them gone for a little while after the events of the morning. Kitty was quite relieved to pull on her winter coat and hat again to venture back outside. It would be nice to get out of the apartment and to escape into the cold air.
What a morning! Kitty exclaimed as they entered the elevator.
Quite. Let's go into the city and find somewhere nice to eat. It's a little late now for lunch, so the first rush may have subsided,
Matt suggested as they stepped out into the lobby. The concierge who had assisted them earlier was busy as they walked across the foyer, so they stepped outside and walked along until they reached a junction where they could hail a passing taxi.
Where do you want to go?
The driver asked once they were inside the cab. Kitty suddenly realized they didn't know the city well enough to have a particular destination in mind.
We'd like a nice restaurant for lunch. Where do you recommend?
Matt asked.
You got it. I know plenty of places. You want to go to Ronnie's? You like Italian food?
The driver asked as he pulled back out into the traffic.
That sounds lovely, Kitty agreed.
She wasn't sure if she did like Italian food,
She tried to recall what she had ever eaten that could be classed as Italian cuisine. She had tried French food, naturally, many times. Still, this would be an adventure. They were soon dropped off outside a very nice-looking restaurant that was still fairly busy with diners. The restaurant had been decorated for Christmas with red, white and green ornaments and ribbons on the Christmas trees. The tables were dressed in crisp white linen and there was a pleasant buzz about the room. "This looks rather lovely." Kitty smiled approvingly at Matt once they were seated comfortably at a dining table. A leather-bound menu was placed in front of them and wine ordered from the attentive, smartly suited waiter.
"It's good to get away for a little while," Matt agreed, "especially after this morning."
"Can you believe the nerve of my father?" Kitty asked, once the waiter had taken their order for lunch and left them to enjoy their wine.
"Unfortunately, yes." Matt grinned at her.
"I mean, there's the fact that we're here in America, having dashed across the Atlantic, assuming he might be at death's door, only to find him in the pink."
"You know he was avoiding some people he owed money to. That he probably feigned being ill just to lie low in his apartment until he could get enough money to get them off his back."
Kitty took a sip of her white wine.
"I had rather gathered that."
Matt's eyes twinkled with amusement.
"It's not funny, Matt. And now there's this dreadful murder."
Kitty placed her glass back down carefully on the white linen tablecloth.
"Yes, I know." Her husband's expression sobered.
The waiter returned and placed two bowls of butternut squash soup in front of them before withdrawing.
"Nora must have slipped away downstairs to meet someone she knew. She would never have gone otherwise," Kitty said, picking up her spoon. "She must have made an arrangement and didn't want anyone to know about it."
"I agree. It also had to be someone familiar with the building who knew she would know about the door. If the concierge took regular breaks at night, she would know and could slip outside through the empty kitchens," Matt said.
"Unless you think perhaps someone forced her to go down there?" Kitty suggested.
"It's possible, but she had taken off her wings and put on her first stole, so she intended to step outside. She could have followed someone down, I suppose, hoping to catch them in some kind of wrongdoing," Matt mused, picking up his bread roll.
"You mean like when Father said Nora had complained that things were going missing and she blamed Peggy, her assistant? There were a lot of very valuable things in that apartment."
Kitty finished her soup and placed her spoon down in the empty bowl.
"Peggy could have been stealing from Nora and passing things on to an accomplice. There was a lot of money there that night after the party from the stalls and the raffle."
Matt finished eating.
"And Nora spotted her sneaking out and followed her downstairs where she was attacked and her jewellery stolen?"
Kitty nodded slowly. She could see how that might be possible.
"We could make the same sort of case against Horatio Blackstock. We don't know how he felt about Nora suggesting he should retire. He may not have much money put aside and could have been taking things, then letting the blame fall on Peggy," Matt said.
The waiter collected their empty dishes and returned within a few seconds with plates containing pasta in a creamy white sauce. Kitty sniffed appreciatively when the food was placed in front of her.
"That's very true. I saw Nora telling him off about something as we left," she agreed, once the waiter had departed after offering to add freshly ground pepper to their food.
Kitty took her first mouthful and was pleasantly surprised by the texture and creaminess of the dish. They remained quiet for some time as they both concentrated on the delicious food in front of them.
"Then we have Mortimer and Titania," Matt said, wiping the corner of his mouth with his napkin. "They live in the same apartment block, so both of them know the building well. They would know about the back door and the kitchens. Nora has been in the habit of slipping out at night, presumably to meet Mortimer somewhere."
"Yes, but Titania didn't look in any fit state to set up a meeting with Nora, and I don't think Nora would have agreed to meet her somewhere clandestine anyway. Especially since Titania had just hit her," Kitty said. She took another mouthful of her food, savouring the taste. It really was delicious. The taxi driver had made a good suggestion.
She would have agreed to meet Mortimer, but then why would he want to kill Nora? Or steal her jewellery?
Matt said. Titania could have heard them planning to meet. She could have followed them and killed Nora, and Mortimer could be covering it up, Kitty suggested. She didn't think it sounded very plausible, but it was a possibility, she supposed.
I don't know if he would cover for her, but she could have bribed him, I suppose. Then there is Lorena and Rudolf.
Matt set his knife and fork down on his now empty plate.
Your father seemed to believe that Nora was unhappy with Rudolf for some reason, and we know Nora funded their lifestyle.
Well, we know they don't live too far away either. I suppose they would know the building, since Nora had been living there for quite a while. I can't remember if they had already left before us or not.
Kitty crinkled her brow as she tried to recall when she had last seen Lorena and her husband at the party. Matt frowned.
I think they were still there. I seem to recall seeing Lorena near the Christmas tree when I picked up that hamper.
So they both have to be considered, I suppose, although Nora seemed very fond of her daughter.
Kitty set her own cutlery down with a satisfied sigh. Lunch was proving very nice indeed. The waiter took their plates and they succumbed to the idea of dessert, persuaded by the appearance of the dishes being delivered to a neighbouring table.
That is bonnet, madame. Chocolate and amaretti cake,
the waiter explained when Kitty inquired.
We'll have two of those then, please.
Matt smiled at her, guessing she wanted to try it. Once their desserts had arrived, Kitty tried a small piece with her spoon.
Oh, this is quite delicious.
She sighed happily as she gazed around the restaurant.
I can't believe we are here, enjoying our lunch after that ghastly journey all the way across the ocean, worrying if my father would be alive when we arrived.
She shook her head in disbelief.
And now we find ourselves embroiled in a murder case.
I know. Although I am obviously delighted to find Edgar hale and hearty, it's not at all the Christmas we had planned,
Matt said.
This probably is me being foolish, but you don't think my father had a point about this Lieutenant Tanfield suspecting him of being involved in Nora's murder?
Kitty asked, as she spooned up the last morsel of her pudding. The frown returned to Matt's face.
I suppose he would have to consider the possibility, but your father and Nora appeared to be on excellent terms. He has no motive, and we were with him at the party and afterwards.
True. And father's criminal record is not for anything violent, just, well, bending the law, usually.
Kitty gave a heavy sigh. That and sticking to some things that were not technically his property.
There seems little more that we can do. We are strangers here, and we will have no insight into anything the police may discover.
Matt looked at her. Kitty guessed he already knew that she was thinking they could poke around a little and ask a few questions.
I suppose so, she agreed. Although if they were to come across something, especially something that would ensure her father was completely out of the frame, then what harm could that do?
Let's pay the bill and take ourselves shopping for an hour or two. Embrace the festive spirit. It'll be Christmas Day in 4 days' time,
Matt suggested, as he drew his white linen napkin from his lap.
Very well. Kitty smiled back at him. After all, they were in New York, and despite everything, they should make the most of being there.
Chapter 7 Matt was delighted to see that his suggestion had proved to be a good one. A trip to see several huge Christmas trees later, they arrived back at the apartment block laden with bags and boxes containing various gifts for friends and family back in Devon. Matt had also managed to acquire a rather pretty brooch as a surprise anniversary gift for Christmas Eve for Kitty. Kitty shivered as Matt paid the taxi driver and picked up all their bags. The air was bitingly cold, and he suspected it would probably start snowing again during the night. The street was already dark, and the sidewalk was slippery underfoot. They stamped the remnants of snow from their shoes on the mat inside the front door and said good evening to the concierge, who appeared to be busy decorating the lobby with more Christmas items. Matt couldn't help wondering if this was an attempt to distract the residents from the murder that had taken place at the rear of the building. He guessed it would take more than a few sprigs of holly to succeed in that aim. The elevator came and they piled inside, ready to ascend to Edgar's floor. As they approached the stop, Matt became aware of loud voices from somewhere on the floor above them. Kitty looked at him as they exited the elevator, and they paused outside Edgar's front door to listen. It sounded as if an argument was in full spate. "I think that's Lorena's voice," Kitty murmured. "Whatever is going on up there?" She thrust her bags into Matt's already overloaded arms, and before he could stop her, she had disappeared up the staircase leading to the penthouse floor. He sighed and resigned himself to waiting for her to return before carrying all the packages inside his father-in-law's apartment. Kitty crept quietly up the stairwell, aware that she was being nosy. The voices grew louder as she neared the top, and she waited just below the top step to listen. She guessed the door of Nora's apartment must be open, which was why the sound of the quarrel was audible on the landing of the floor below.
"Please don't try to play the innocent with me."
Kitty was sure that was Lorena's voice. She had noticed that the woman had a slight huskiness to her tone that was quite distinctive.
"I have no idea what you are talking about. I already told the police I said goodnight to your mother and went to bed. I have no idea what she did after that or where she went."
A woman's voice, young and sounding frightened. That had to be Peggy Marsh.
"I know you're lying. Where is my mother's jewelry? And how do I know that all the money that was collected up from the party is still here?"
Lorena demanded.
"I don't know where her jewels are. They aren't in the apartment, so she must have been wearing them when she left. The money is all in the safe. Your mother watched us put it in there herself before I went to bed, along with the receipts. You can ask Horatio if you don't believe me."
Peggy sounded as if she were about to cry.
"Well, of course he'll cover for you. You could be in this together. Mother told me she was going to dismiss you for theft. She said her silver kept disappearing."
Kitty's eyes widened at this. So it was true. Nora had suspected Peggy of stealing some of the trinkets from her. Kitty flattened herself against the cold, cream-painted wall of the stairwell and leaned forward to listen more closely.
"You're wrong. I would never steal anything. She never said anything to me at all," Peggy countered.
"Miss Lorena, please. You are overwrought with shock."
The deeper, deferential male voice had to be Horatio, who seemed to have come to Peggy's assistance.
"And as for you, you're finished. I suggest you pack up your things and go. Mother said you were past retirement age."
Lorena, far from calming down, seemed to have taken her anger up a notch.
"Miss Lorena, please, it's Christmas. I have nowhere to go, and surely it would be imprudent to leave the apartment unattended with so much to do."
There was a note of panic in the manservant's voice.
"Lorena, honey?"
Another male voice joined the conversation, and Kitty assumed it had to be Rudolph.
"Don't honey me,"
Lorena said.
"I know you're upset, but he does have a point. There are a lot of valuable things here that need to be taken care of. Let's not be too hasty,"
Rudolph said.
"Very well, Horatio. You have until the new year, and then I want you gone. Both of you,"
Lorena snapped.
"Lorena, do be reasonable,"
Rudolph pleaded.
"I think I am being more than reasonable. I want both Peggy and Horatio gone. You both have till January 2nd.
The door banged, and Kitty hurried back down the stairs to where Matt was waiting patiently outside Edgar's door.
Quickly, open the door!
Kitty took some of the packages while Matt found the spare key that Edgar had given them to the apartment. They had scarcely made it inside when the elevator rumbled past on its way down from the penthouse. Kitty closed the front door with a sigh of relief.
That was a narrow squeak,
she remarked cheerfully as Matt shook his head in despair at her antics. He carried their packages into the sitting room and placed them on the table. Edgar was seated beside the fireplace. The cream silk-shaded standard lamp was on and he was listening to a play on the radio.
I say, been doing a spot of shopping, eh? I hope you had a good lunch,
Edgar remarked when he saw the bags and boxes.
We had a lovely lunch, thank you. These are just a few gifts for people at home,
Kitty said as she discarded her outdoor clothes and came to warm her hands in front of the fire.
Spot of tea?
Edgar asked as Matt too discarded his heavy grey woolen overcoat and his hat before collecting up the coats and hats to hang them up on the hooks in the hallway.
Marvellous, Kitty agreed.
Edgar looked at her expectantly for a second, and when she didn't take his hint, he got up with a sigh and headed into the small kitchenette.
Did you learn anything for your eavesdropping?
Matt asked in a low tone once Edgar was out of the room.
Oh my goodness, yes. Lorena was in a high temper over something. She accused Peggy of being a thief and insinuated that Horatio was covering for her. Then she gave them both notice and said they were to be gone by January 2nd.
Kitty sat down on the sofa and looked at her husband.
Good heavens, she hasn't let the grass grow under her feet, has she? My word. How did Peggy and Horatio take it?
Matt asked as he sat down beside her.
Not terribly well, as you might expect. Both Peggy and Horatio sounded upset. Rudolph, Lorena's husband, tried to intervene, but she was very short with him too.
Kitty wondered what had gone on to trigger Lorena's ire against the two servants. She knew the woman had to be distressed at her mother's murder, but her reaction seemed quite extreme. She had also sounded as if she was angry with her husband, too. Edgar carried a loaded tea tray into the room and Kitty hastily cleared a space on the table so he could set it down.
Here we are. Did you go somewhere nice for lunch?
He asked as Kitty took over pouring and serving the tea.
It was very nice. The taxi driver recommended an Italian restaurant called Ronnie's. Have you ever been there, Papa?
Kitty asked as she passed a cup of tea to Matt.
Oh, yes, several times. Excellent food and service, her father said as he took his seat back beside the fire and switched off the radio.
Has anyone telephoned about the murder?
Kitty asked as she helped herself to one of the biscuits her father had thoughtfully added to the tea tray. She had wondered if people might ring once word got out since Edgar lived so close to Nora.
I had a telephone call from Mortimer. He sounded dreadfully cut up. The police had only just left there, and he said they really upset Titania. I gather they must have been implying that she had a motive after slapping poor Nora at the party.
Edgar stirred his tea.
Did he say why he called?
Kitty asked, as she brushed biscuit crumbs off the front of her pale pink cashmere jumper. Titania did seem to have a strong motive, but Kitty wasn't sure if she could have strangled her former neighbour.
Not really. I think he was just trying to find out who else the police had spoken to try and reassure Titania that they were talking to lots of people. I rather think that Lieutenant Tanfield may have said that you and Matt found Nora's body,
Edgar said.
Oh dear, had he spoken to anyone else?
Kitty asked. She wondered what else Mortimer had said. He could have been trying to find out what had happened when Nora's body had been found, she supposed. She hoped it wouldn't become common knowledge that she and Matt had been the ones to discover Nora. Although she suspected it wouldn't stay secret for long.
He said that Lorena had telephoned him as soon as she heard the news from the police. I think the poor girl was in shock. She and Rudolph were coming over straight away to Nora's apartment.
He said Lorena was very distressed that her mother's jewellery was missing. I suppose she would want to check for herself and to make sure nothing else had gone.
Edgar set his spoon in his saucer before taking a sip of his tea.
I suppose she would be worried. Nora was wearing some very expensive pieces at the party. Did she have a lot of jewellery, do you know?
Matt asked.
Oh, yes, her late husband travelled a lot and would buy her pieces from all over the place. Rubies from India, sapphires from Ceylon, emeralds from Brazil, you name it,
Edgar said. Did she keep them all in her apartment? Kitty asked. Personally, she would have thought that would have been most unwise, even with a safe.
No, most of them are in a vault at the bank, although she still had some rather nice objets d'art around the place that are worth a pretty penny. Bits of silver and some rather lovely snuff boxes her husband had collected. You probably noticed her display cases,
Edgar said.
I take it some of those things were the items Nora had said had gone missing?
Matt asked. Edgar took another drink of his tea before replying.
Yes, although some of them seemed to have simply been moved. At first, the girl that does the cleaning came under suspicion, but then a rather jolly little silver picture frame disappeared, and it was the week the cleaner was off. Her son had measles.
Did that turn up again? Kitty asked. She thought she could see something of a pattern to this tale. A glance at Matt showed her that he too was thinking along similar lines as they had investigated cases like this before.
Yes, actually, I rather think it did. It had been moved from the piano onto a bookshelf, apparently.
Edgar placed his now empty cup back on its saucer.
How well do you know Peggy Marsh and Horatio Blackstock?
Matt asked.
Horatio, not terribly well. He keeps himself to himself. He's one of the old school servants. He's been with Nora forever, I think,
Edgar said. So you wouldn't be surprised that she was thinking of asking him to retire? Kitty was puzzled. Good servants who were loyal and honest were not easy to come by.
Edgar frowned. Well, he is rather long in the tooth, but yes, I was a bit surprised. However, I don't think he approved of her dalliance with Mortimer. Horatio is a very religious man. He attends church every Sunday morning. Mortimer can't stand Horatio. I know he told Nora he felt as if he were judging him all the time. Perhaps it was Mortimer's idea that Nora let Horatio go.
What about Peggy? Kitty asked.
Peggy would often stop for a little chat. She's quite a sweet girl. Nora, of course, worked her to the bone, ordering her here, there, and everywhere. She always seemed a bit lonely and somewhat out of her depth. So I think she enjoyed having someone to talk to. She told me that she hadn't much family, just a brother, I think she said. So working for Nora gave her a place to live and the chance to see the world. She had accompanied Nora, Lorena, and Rudolph on several trips.
Edgar put his cup and saucer down on the table. Matt glanced at Kitty.
These missing items, the ones that vanished and then reappeared, do you think either Peggy or Horatio could have been pawning them?
Kitty's father seemed taken aback at the suggestion.
I don't know. Well, now you say that, of course I suppose it would account for it.
Kitty had been right about her husband thinking along the same lines that she had been thinking. This was exactly what had happened in a case they had investigated in Dartmouth. Do either of them ever seem as if they might be short of money for any reason? She asked.
Well, I don't think their wages are high, but they do have room and board.
Edgar's brow furrowed.
Horatio, obviously, has never spoken to me on a personal level about his finances, but Peggy doesn't ever seem as if she is struggling. She rarely goes out, and her expenses are paid for, and she doesn't seem to spend a lot on clothes.
It is all very peculiar. Lorena seemed very angry, and she was adamant about both of them being dismissed. Kitty wondered if Lorena had realised what might have been happening with her mother's possessions. She had certainly accused both servants of dishonesty. I can see why she might dismiss Peggy,
With Nora's death, Peggy has no role. She might remain until after the funeral to deal with the condolences and packing up various belongings. Horatio, though, he must have known Lorena from when she was very young. I believe he was with Nora since early in her marriage